We're holding on page Yud Aleph in Megillah, about the middle of the page, Sheva Vasu Amei Medina, middle of Os Yud. We're in the middle of Darshaning the Psukim of the Megillah, so we're up to if we're in the first pasuk. It says that Achashverosh ruled over Sheva Vasu Amei Medina, 127 countries. The question is why it says it like that. Why does it say first Sheva and then Esrim and then Mea? Which Marsha points out, usually many times in the Psukim, you have the larger number goes first, like by Yuchai Yisara, Meir Shana, the Esrim Shana, the Sheva Shanim, the largest number going first. So why over here does it list the smaller numbers first? So Amar of Chista, B'tchila Malach al Sheva, because it means that at first Achashverosh ruled over only seven countries, all of a Saif Malach al Esrim, later on he ruled over another 20, all of a Saif Malach al Meir, and then finally he ruled over yet another 100. Which the idea being, in other words, that Marshall explains, the vort is, since the Medrash famously says, why did he have 127 countries, is because he was married to Esther, and she's a descendant of Sarah, who lived 127 years, so in the source of that, there were 127 countries, so therefore, over time, he ruled over more and more countries in the source of Esther, and ultimately in the source of Sarah. So the Gemara asks, Elameata, so you're telling me whenever you have something like that where it gives the smaller number first and then working its way up to the larger number, then you're darshaning like that. Dichtiv, what about, for example, it says, V'ushnei chayei Amram shevo shloshom as shana. It says, Amram lived 7 years and 30 years on 100 years. My darsha spay, what are you going to darshan in there? Now, if you have the larger numbers first, then fine, that's the normal way. And if you have also, if it said Shana by each one, then fine, like you have by Avram and by Sarah, then we learn that just like she was when she was seven, so when she was 20, and just like a 20, so is 100. But by Amram, we don't have Shana by each one. So here it doesn't say Medina by each one. So therefore that's why the Gemara is asking specifically from Amram. Although Marashah wonders, you have in the Psukim before that, you also have it says Levi lived 137 years and Kohath lived 133 years, and it does the same kind of thing, uses the same kind of style. So why is the Gemara Davka asking from Amram rather than from them? Maybe B'doichuk you could say, because with Levi and Kohath, there was a period of their life before they came to Mitzrayim and afterwards, and therefore the Pasuk wants to stress that Kulam Shavim, that all of they were the same tzaddikim throughout, whereas Amram lived his entire life in Mitzrayim. So maybe that's why the Gemara specifically asks from him. But anyway, the point is, just because you have the numbers from smaller to larger doesn't necessarily mean that there's a drasha. So why by Achshverosh are we assuming that there is? The answer is shiny hocha de kro yisteru. The difference is here by Achashverosh, the whole thing is an extra pasuk. Mechti ksiv mehodu van kush, because consider it already says that he ruled from hodu to kush. Sheva v'esu medina umeya medina lomali. Why would it have to also add 127 countries? Once we know, and we discussed previously that you have the opinion that hodu and kush are at opposite ends of the world, so we know he ruled over the entire known world. And even according to the second opinion, that hodu and kush are one right next to the other. But again, we're saying it means that just as easily as he ruled over those, so he ruled over the rest of the world. So there's no particular reason to mention the actual number of countries. Shmamina l'drasha, therefore we must say that number is coming for drasha. And since it puts it in the order, first the smaller number and then working up to the larger number, then we understand that it means that gradually over time he ruled over more and more countries. By the way, the Gemara over here, which is assuming that 127 countries makes up the entire known world, that the Medrash actually says differently in one of the Targumim on Megillas Esther. It says that actually there were almost twice as many countries in the world, or at least there were at that time, 252 countries. What happened was at one point almost half of them revolted against Achashverosh and made themselves independent, and he's left with only 127. But our Gemara clearly is disagreeing with that and saying that 127 is the entire known world. Okay. Which brings the Gemara into Tanan Rabbanan, Shloshim Malachim Heim Shemolcho B'Kippah. There were three kings who ruled over the entire kippah. Now, kippah means basically like a kippah that we wear. So Rashi explains, it means, in other words, under the entire vault, under the entire dome of the heavens, meaning everywhere in the known world. And they are Elohein Achav ben Omri, Unvachadnetzer, V'Achashverosh. Now, when we say we don't mean that in their times there were no other kings. There were in fact in the case of Ahab, for example, we actually find there were times when he himself was subservient to other kings. But there was a period of time during his kingship when he's the overlord of all the kings, as the Gemara is going to go on to say over here, that he's able to force them to do what he wants. So not to say they don't have a certain degree of independence of their own, but they're all beholden to him. So, Ahab ben Omri, Tosfos, by the way, points out, you also have Alexander the Great. The reason why he's not mentioned, Tosfos says, is because we're listing over here only ones that it says in the Pesukim. Alexander the Great lived after Tanakh was over, so therefore we're not mentioning him. The Rebbe points out in a footnote to a letter printed in the back of one of the volumes of Likud HaSicha, says, well, that by the same token, what about Paroi? He was also Moshe Bakipa. But the difference is, these, we're going to find an explicit pasuk by each one of them, which implies that they ruled over the entire known world, whereas by Paroi, we know that was the case, but it doesn't actually say so in so many words. Besides which, also, the Rebbe points out that was a special thing, that was for the sake of the covered of the Jewish people, but with these kings, it's not necessarily like that. So, Ahab ben Omri, deka'omalei ovad Yahu le'eliyahu. We have as follows. The Psukim tell the story in Minag Ashkenaz. This is the beginning of last week's Atorah of Kisisa. In our Minag, we start only in the middle of the story. But anyway, you have where there's been a famine going on in Eretz Yisrael for several years. Ahab and Evadia are going to look for any grass to keep the animals alive. On the way, Evadia meets Eliyahu. Eliyahu tells him, tell Ahab that I'm here and I want to see him. And Evadia is very worried. He says, Eliyahu, I know you have a habit of you disappear. So now what's going to happen? I'm going to tell Ahab that you're around and you want to see him and you're going to disappear and I'm going to be in big trouble. And he says to Eliyahu, Chai Hashem alekach, I swear as Hashem your God lives, im yesh goyu mamlocha, if there is, meaning there is not a single nation or a single kingdom, asher l'sholach adoni shom l'vakeshcha, where my master Ahab has not sent messengers to look whether you're there, v'omru oyen, and each one of them said no, v'ishbias a goyves a mamlocha v'goyma, and he would actually beswear that kingdom and that nation and that kingdom that they haven't seen. Now, if Ahab was not an overlord over them, how would he have the ability to force them to accept the Shavua? That implies that he had a certain degree of rulership over them, which therefore justifies calling him Molech Bekit. Next, in Nebuchadnezzar, by Nebuchadnezzar, you have the pasuk. Yahu tells Sidkiyahu, tells all the kings of that time, any nation or any kingdom that is not going to serve Nebuchadnezzar as vassals, then they're going to be destroyed. So we see that everybody knuckled under to Nebuchadnezzar and became his vassals, or he destroyed them. So therefore we see that he was Molech Bekeva. Marsha points out actually that the Psukim there also mentioned it wasn't just Nebuchadnezzar, there was also his son Elva Meroidach and his grandson Belshazzar, who we're going to talk about the whole chronology soon. Okay, Marsha says maybe we mean Nebuchadnezzar and his descendants, but anyway, he's another one who's Molech Bekipa. And the third one, Achashverosh, Hadamoran. Achashverosh, because we said he ruled over Mehoidavad Kush, depending on how we learn it, but either way, it means that he ruled over the entire known world. Why is it important for us to know that they were all Molech Bekipa? Ben Yehoyada says, because each one of them, we can say, they earn that in the schus of something that they did. El Achav, we find in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that he honored the Torah. In the case of Nebuchadnezzar, I don't remember now what it was, that he honored Hashem, that the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, that he ran three steps in honor of Hashem to rescind the letter that had been written without proper respect for Hashem, as the Gemara tells the story over there. Take the paper as well. We'll need it soon. And Achashverosh, for the fact that he was married to Esther, and in her schus is, as we said, why he got to rule over the whole world. So that's why the Gemara highlights these three. So the Gemara asks, Vetuleka, you're telling me there are no other kings who ruled over the entire known world? What about Shlomo HaMelech? And we said before, Mitifzach van Azar, where we have the same thing. Does it mean Tifzach and Azar are at opposite ends of the known world, or does it mean that he ruled over the whole world as easily as Tifzach and Azar? The Gemara answers, Shlomo le'Sadik Malchusei. The answer is his kingship did not finish off to the same degree as the other ones, because we have the story in Gittin where Ashmedai threw him off the throne and impersonated him. So therefore, so he didn't end up ruling the entire time like the way everybody else did, that we say. The Gemara asks, well, that works out according to the Gemara in Gittin. There has two opinions. Was it that he started out as a melech and eventually he became a hediot? Now, eventually, Ashmedai kicked him off the throne and he never regained his kingship. Now, Marsha says, the fact is, the psukim over there in Melachim about Shlomo do say that he ruled for 40 years and then Vayishkav, and he was buried with his fathers, implying that in the graves of Beis David, implying that he actually finished out his reign. But fine, we could say that maybe Ashmedai, we could talk about when exactly during his reign Ashmedai kicked him off the throne, but whatever, there is an opinion that he never regained his kingship. So Elul Mandalam, Melech, the Hediot or Melech, but you have an opinion that he did, that he was a king. Then for a while, he was a commoner wandering around over there and saying, Ani Shlomo Hayisi Melech, as the Gemara tells the whole story over there. And then eventually he regained his kingship. So according to that, Ma'ikal Meimar. Then what can you say? Why is he not in the same category of Molech Petipa? And if you're going to say, because you have that interruption in the middle, Nuchanetzah also had the interruption in the middle when he went crazy for a few years and was living among the animals. The answer is no, because Shiny Shloima de Milta Achrisi Habebei. The difference is that with Shloima, there was a whole different thing. His was a whole different kind of kingship. It wasn't just unlike the other kings that he ruled over the nations in this world. Also, Shemalach Alal Yonim Valach Tachtoinim. He also ruled over the higher creatures, meaning over the shading. He ruled over, now, as we have the whole story in Gittin over there, where he ruled not only over all of humanity, but also over the shading. And you have the story over there of how eventually he captured Ashmedai and bent him to his will. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Vayeshev Shloima, Al-Kisei Hashem, Vagomer, as the Pasuk says, Shloima sat on the throne of Hashem, meaning that his kingship was a semblance of Hashem's kingship to rule over higher beings as well. So Marsha stresses, it doesn't mean Malachim. Malachim are higher than the Shemaim. It means, in other words, Hashem's throne, so to speak, is above the Shemaim, and Shloima's throne was like that, or actually the throne, the Shemaim are Hashem's throne, Hashemaim Kisi. So therefore, Shloima's throne was like that. And since Shadim are below the Shemaim, they're higher than Uth. The Gemara tells us in Chagiga, they're half person, half Malach, then therefore Shloima ruled over them. The Malachim are higher than Shemaim, so therefore, so Shloima didn't rule over them. Hakosev brings over here from the Rashba that gives, first he gives that explanation, that it means, like we're saying, that he ruled over the Shadim as well, but then he also brings another possibility. The other kings that we're talking about over here, how did they come to rule over the whole world? They had to use their military might for it. They had a powerful army, and therefore the other kings had to give in to them unless they're going to be conquered and destroyed. Shloima, on the other hand, we know Shloima was an Ish Shalom, Shalom Yir B'yamav, as Hashem sent the Navi to promise David. He didn't take over, he didn't rule over the whole world by force like these other kings. He ruled over them because he was such a great Chacham that everybody came from all over to hear his chokhmah and to accept his rulership, al derech, like you're going to have with Melech HaMashiach. So therefore, that's another meaning of that shiny Shloima, the Milta Achrisi Habebei. His was a whole different type of kingship, not based on force and on military power, but rather based on his chokhmah of Torah. Okay. So therefore, so Shloima is not in the category of the other ones. Fine, the Gemara asks about Ika Sancheiriv. Fine, what about Sancheiriv? Dichtibbe, and it says on him, Mi b'chol of the Kehal Rotzis, Asher Itzilo es Artsim Miyodi. What god of any country is there who saved their country from me? There's none, and therefore he claims, I'm going to be able to conquer Yerushalayim as well. So why isn't he listed among the ones who were Moilich B'kippa? And the answer is, Ha'ikur Yerushalayim, B'lai Kavish, the fact is, he never ended up conquering Yerushalayim. Now, obviously, we knew, and then the Gemara knew to begin with that he didn't conquer Yerushalayim, but the Gemara assumed to begin with that he conquered the entire Eretz Yehuda and all the other countries. The fact that one city held out against him doesn't really count. But the answer is no, that's the most essential thing. He didn't conquer that city, then his whole kingship is a nothing, or at least it doesn't belong in the category of Moshe B'Kippa. Marsha points, by the way, out that we're going to have soon, it's going to say about Kurdish that he's just boasting, it's just an empty boast. But here, Sancheiriv is sending this message to the people of Yerushalayim themselves, and they knew that he hasn't conquered it, so they know that when he's boasting, it's not stam an empty boast, they know he's telling the truth. But on the other hand, the fact is he didn't end up conquering Yerushalayim, therefore he's not in this category. Okay, the Gemara asks about Ika Do Yavish. What about Do Yavish? The first Do Yavish of Paras Umadai, Dichtiv, and the Pasuk says, so you have the whole story over there where Daniel was thrown into the lion's den, and then he was saved from that, B'derech Nes. And afterwards, it says, Do Yavish Malka Ksav Chalam Amaya V'Gomer. King Do Yavish sent a letter to all the country, to all the nations in the world, Shlomchen Yiske, may your peace increase, and I want to inform you about this nest that happened with Daniel, and that you should all respect the Jewish God. So on the face of it, that means he ruled over the whole world. The Gemara answers no. As a matter of fact, there were seven countries that he did not rule over. Because we have at the beginning of that parak, it says, Shvar Kodim Do Yavesh, it pleased Do Yavesh when he became king, and he appointed over the kingdom, 120 Achashtarpanim, as we have the word Achashtarpanim in the Megillah, it means basically like high level governors. In English, you have a word satrap that comes ultimately from the same Persian word. Anyway, so he appointed 120 of them to help run the kingdom. Now, 120 means that there was one per province. Well, that means he ruled over 120 provinces, not 127. Therefore, that shows that he wasn't Moshe B'Kid. He's missing seven. So there's 127 altogether. And then here it says, by Daryavish, he had 120 Achashtarpanim, meaning that there were seven that he didn't rule over yet, which Achashverosh conquered those only later. Now, so why is he sending L'chol HaMamaya? Then in that case, why is the Pasuk saying that he's sending his letter to all the nations? Maharsha says, okay, he's informing even the ones who are not part of his empire. He wants to inform them about this nest that happened with Daniel, but he didn't actually rule over them. So therefore, he doesn't count. Okay, the Gemara asks about Ika Kodesh. What about another one who should be on this list is Kodesh. Dichtibbe, where it says on him, when he announces that the Jews can return to Eretz Yisrael and rebuild the Mishmikdash, Koyama Kodesh Melech Paras, so says Kodesh, the kingdom of Persia, Kol Mamlecha Yisaretz Nasan Li Hashem V'Gomer. Hashem has given me all the kingdom of the earth, so why isn't he counted? And the answer is he didn't actually rule over all of them. Hosem Ishtabuchi Hod Kamishtabach Benafshe, he's boasting about how much he rules over, but in fact he doesn't rule over. He didn't actually rule over the entire world. Meaning, Maharsha says the other psukim that we quoted about the other kings, about Achav and about Nebuchadnezzar and so forth, those are all written in third person. Therefore, we can say that the Navi who wrote that pasuk, in fact, was telling the actual facts. Whereas here we're quoting a letter that Kodesh himself said, so he's boasting that he rules over everything, even though in fact he does not. So he doesn't belong in this list. With that said, though, Targum Sheni on Megillas Esther lists, I mentioned a couple of days ago, that it mentions 10 kings who ruled over the entire known world, the first being Hashem, the second Nimrod, and so on and so forth, until we have the ninth will be Mashiach, and the tenth will be Hashem again. So then we have Anirish and Van Yachron, and a number of the ones that are on this list are Taka in there, even though the Gemara is saying, and for one reason or another, they don't actually belong in the list of Moshe B'Kippah. Nevertheless, the Targum Sheni has a kind of a looser definition of what's considered Moshe B'Kippah, and it does count then. Now, Hashem is always, but in other words, we have at the beginning, Hashem was the everybody knew that Hashem is king. Nobody need any human kings, and eventually there'll come a time when Moloch Aleinu Hashem Levadcha, The Pasuk says, "By Yomim Mahem Kasheves Hamelach." The Pasuk says, "In those days, when the king was sitting on it, when the king sat on his throne." So that implies that the next events in the Megillah are going to be when he first became king. But the next Pasuk says, "Vishnas Sholosh Lamochai," in the third year of his kingship. So when is this? When did the party? When did the party take place? When he first became king, or in his third year? Omar Rava, my Kesheves means va'achash nisyash v'daite. The word Kesheves doesn't mean when he first sat on the throne. It means when his mind was completely at ease. Only in the third year is he completely at ease, thinking that now there's that now his kingship is secure and the Jewish people are not going to be taken out of Golus. Omar, because he figures to himself, and this is where we have this paper that I handed out, where it'll help us. Follow the numbers that the Gemara is going to say over here. What we have to realize is that many years earlier, Yirmiyahu had said in Nevuah that there was going to be 70 years of Malchus Babel, and then Hashem says, I'm going to remember the Jewish people. Now, it wasn't certain when the 70 years count from. So Achshverosh says, Omar, he thinks to himself, Belshazzar Monavatar. Belshazzar previously counted those 70 years, and he made a mistake, and he paid for it with his life and his kingdom. I am going to count them, and I'm not going to make a mistake. Mayhi, what does he mean? What's going on? So like this, Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, Koyamar Hashem, Hashem says, this is part of a letter that Yirmiyah sent to the Jews who had already been exiled to Babel. You had, there was the Golos of Yechoniah 11 years before Churban Bayis Rishon. And at that point, there had been the Chodesh V'Hamaskir, the important Talmid Chachamim, who were taken into Golos. Mordechai was among them. So now Yirmiyahu is sending them a letter informing them, you should know, there are false Nevi'im who are claiming that Golos Bavel is going to be short. Be aware, Yirmiyahu tells them it's not going to be short. It's going to last 70 years. So he says, Ki lefim alois leBavel shivim shana. It says, when there are 70 years filled up for Bavel, then Hashem says, I will remember you. Now, Malois the Bavel Shivim Shana seems to imply from when Bavel first became a world empire. Uchtiv. But you have another pasuk where many years later, Daniel is trying to figure out when the Geula is going to take place. And it says, L'malois l'chorvis Yerushalayim Shivim Shana, to fill up for the destruction of Yerushalayim 70 years. So, what are you counting from? Are you counting from when Bavel first became a world empire, or are you counting from the Churban? So, like this. What happened was, starting with Belshazzar, he figured that it means the first one. He figured that it means counting from when Bavel first became a world empire. So he figured like this, Choshev Memhei Shninde Nebuchadnezzar, he counted 45 years that Nebuchadnezzar ruled. Right now, the Gemara is assuming that each of these numbers that we're saying are full numbers of years. As you see on the papers over here, eventually the Gemara is going to say, not necessarily, some of them were fractional years. But anyway, you have 45 years of Nebuchadnezzar. As the Gemara is going to demonstrate soon how we know that. V'chof gimel de Evel Meroidach. Then you have 23 years of his son Evel Meroidach, who took over as the next king. V'tauti didei. And then you have 2 years of Belshazzar. So far, that makes seven. Havu shivim. That makes 70. So when what he thought was the 70 years had passed, he figured there's no Geula yet. Therefore, it means it's not going to happen. Apik money to be makdisha, so he took out the kelim of the Beis Mikdash, the ishtamish behind, and he used them by his party. And that's when there was the writing on the wall, and that night Belshazzar was killed. So now, a few years later, Achashverosh is saying, Belshazzar, what? So that's the thing. So because he thought that you count from when Bavel first, from when Nebuchadnezzar first started ruling, and from then it is in fact 70 years. But he didn't realize, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, there's other ways of thinking of it. Instead of counting from the year that Nebuchadnezzar became king, he should have counted from the next year. You see here in the handouts, you have year one of Nebuchadnezzar. He conquered Nineveh, and that's when Bavel became a world empire, because then they took over what was left of the kingdom of Ashur. Only in the second year did he conquer Jehoiakim and make him his vassal. So first of all, so Belshazzar is already off because of that, because he should have counted instead of from when Nebuchadnezzar became king, he should have counted from the next year when Nebuchadnezzar first conquered Eretz Yisrael. So then he was a year off already. But in any case, Achashverosh is going to say, obviously that doesn't work out either, and we have to count from a later point, as the Gemara is going to go on to say. So, Umanolon Nebuchadnezzar Memhei Shnin Malach. First, let's work out how do we know that Nebuchadnezzar ruled for 45 years. So like this, Do'omamar, we learn in a Braisa, Golu B'Shiva, Golu B'Shmoina. The Jewish people went into Golos, some Jews, that is, went into Golos in the 7th year and in the 8th year. Golu B'Yurches, Golu B'Yurtes. They also went into Golos in the 18th year and the 19th year. Now, here the Gemara just keeps things short. In Erchin, when the Gemara discusses this, it sounds like it means there were four different Golias. So here, you just have in parentheses, V'chidalad Golias Golu. Were there, in fact, four Golias during that period of history? V'habez Golias Golu. There were only two. You have the Golos of Yechoniah, and 11 years later, you have the Golos at the time of the Churban. So why are we listing 7 and 8 and 18 and 19 as though there were four Golias? Ella, what it means is Golo B'Shiva L'Kibush Yehoyakim, Golus Yehoyakim, means 7 years after Nebuchadnezzar had conquered Yehoyakim. So here you have in the handouts over here, in year five of, in year two of Nebuchadnezzar's kingship, which was already year five of Yehoyakim, because Yehoyakim had become king a few years earlier, is when Nebuchadnezzar had conquered Eretz Yisrael and Yehoyakim became his vassal. Then a few years later, Yehoyakim revolts against Nebuchadnezzar, and eventually comes year 8 of Nebuchadnezzar, which is year 11 of Yehoyakim, and which is also year 7 since Nebuchadnezzar had conquered Eretz Yisrael, because remember, he conquered it in the second year of his rule. So now, when we say the 7th year and the 8th year, we mean it was the 7th year since he had conquered, since he had started his overlordship over Yehoyakim, which is the 8th year of Nebuchadnezzar's own rulership. So in that year was the first Golos, that was Golos Yehoyakim. So it was the seventh year of Kibush Yehoyakim from when he had conquered Yehoyakim and made him his vassal, which is Shishnas Chestam Nebuchadnezzar, which is the eighth year of Nebuchadnezzar. To put it in actual, I didn't put on these handouts the actual years Lamaisa Bereshis, and I probably should have, but to put it in terms of actual years Lamaisa Bereshis, Nebuchadnezzar became king in the year 3319. Gimel Alafim Shin Yud Tes. He conquered Yehoyakim the next year, Gimel Alafim Shin Chaf, 3320. Golos Yechoniah, which was 7 years later, was in 3327. So it was the seventh year since he had conquered Eretz Yisrael, and it was the eighth year since he himself had become king. That's what it means, 7 versus 8. So it was the seventh year looking at it from the point of view of when he conquered Eretz Yisrael, and it was the eighth year looking at it from when he had actually become king. So that's what it means, 7 and 8. Then there was a second Golos, Golob Yud Ches, the Kibosh Yehoyakim, Golos Tzidkiyahu. Then there was the Golos of Tzidkiyahu's times when the Churban took place, Sheishnas Yud Tes, Lamalchus Nebuchadnezzar. Same thing. It was the 18th year of Nebuchadnezzar's rulership of Eretz Yisrael, and it was the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar's own reign. The Omar, as we learn in the Brisa, Shonu Yishon Kibosh Nineveh, during Nebuchadnezzar's first year, he conquered Nineveh, and that was the end of the empire of Asher. Shonu Shniyah Kibosh Yehoyakim Melech Yehuda, in the second year, he went and conquered Yehoyakim, meaning, in other words, he brought his army into Eretz Yisrael, and Yehoyakim was forced to become his vassal and start paying him taxes and tributes and whatnot. So that's why we have 1 year off. We have 1 year offset between when Nebuchadnezzar became king and when he conquered Eretz Yisrael. So that's why we say 7 versus 8. What? So the three. Where do you see 3 years? So Rashi mentions because at the beginning of Sefer Daniel, it says that Yehoyakim, it says in the third year of Yehoyakim, Nebuchadnezzar took him captive. Now, what does it actually mean? It means that 3 years earlier, Yehoyakim had revolted against Tzidkiyahu, against Nebuchadnezzar. What happened was, here you have in the paper over here, you have in year 5 of Yehoyakim is when Nebuchadnezzar conquered him. Then in year 8, Yehoyakim revolted against him and tried to make himself independent. And finally, after 3 years, in year 11 of Yehoyakim, is when Nebuchadnezzar crushed that revolt and Yehoyakim was killed or died. So you can start counting from when Yehoyakim revolted against Nebuchadnezzar. Yeah. So far we have, in other words, at the time when Nebuchadnezzar took Yehoyakim, also known as Yechoniah, into Golos, that was in the eighth year of his rulership. Uchtiv, and now you have a pasuk. In the 37th year of the Golos of Yehoyakim Melech Yehuda, the 12th chodesh, in the 12th month, Adar, the Esrim v'shiva lachodesh, on the 27th of the month, Nase Evel Merodach Melech Bavel v'shnas Moche Esroshi Yehoyakim Melech Yehuda, then Evel Merodach, the new king of Bavel, in the year right after he had become king, he lifted up the head of Yehoyakim Melech Yehuda by Yotzi Oisim v'esakel, and he took him out of jail. What happened was, by the way, you have in Malachim, it says the 27th, in Yirmiyah, it says the 25th. The Medrash mentions that actually what it was is Nebuchadnezzar died on the 25th of Adar, but nobody was sure that he's really dead yet. Because after all, you had that time when he went crazy and lived among the animals, and meanwhile, Evel Merodach actually had taken over temporarily as king, and when Nebuchadnezzar came back, he was mad at him and threw him in jail. So now everybody's nervous again, what if it's the same thing? So they had to unbury Nebuchadnezzar and schlep him out of his grave and drag him all over the place so everybody could see that he really is truly dead. That took place, the Medrash says, on the 26th of Adar, and then on the 27th of Adar, Evel Merodach actually became king, and he immediately took Yechoniah out of jail. So we see that was 37 years after Yechoniah had been taken into Golos. 37 plus 8 is 45. There you go. That's how we know that Nebuchadnezzar ruled for 45 years. Tamne v'tlosin v'sheva. So you add together 8 and 37. Harei memhe shenin de Nebuchadnezzar. That's how you get 45 years of Nebuchadnezzar. Next. V'chof gimel de Evel Merodach. That Evel Merodach ruled for 23 years. Gemara. We don't know that explicitly. That we only have the Kabbalah. That it's so. So Belshazzar, now Belshazzar has already ruled for 2 years, Hoshivim, therefore you get to 70 years, given the Molo Shivin below Ifruk. He saw at this point 70 years, what he thought was 70 years had passed, and they hadn't yet been redeemed, Omar, he thinks to himself, Tulay Parki, then that means the Jewish people are not going to be redeemed anymore, and my kingdom is secure, and therefore that's why he felt free to use the kelim of the Beis Hamikdash. Up until that point, Nebuchadnezzar and Evel Meroidach and even Belshazzar up to this point had been nervous about using them because they knew Hashem is powerful and he could take revenge on them. Now that Belshazzar figured the 70 years are up, then he figured he's out of danger. So he took out the kelim of the Beis Hamikdash, the Ishtamash Bohin, and he started using them by his party. This is why Daniel says to Belshazzar, when you have, there's the writing on the wall, and they call in Daniel to explain it, and he gives Belshazzar a long speech telling him off for what he did, and he tells him, you have exalted yourself, you prided yourself against the master of heaven, against Hashem. They brought the kelim of his house before you, and you're using them for your party. And the pasuk says, on that very night, Belshazzar, the king of Kasdim, was killed. So that's it. Malchus Babel is over. And the next pasuk says, now Daryavish, this is not Daryavish, the son of Achashverosh. This is the first Daryavish, who is he was the father-in-law of Kodesh. He took over as the new emperor when he was 62 years old. I've mentioned over here in the paper, by the way, an interesting thing. The Medrash says this, Daryavish is the only Goyish king where it actually says how old he was when he became king. Why is that? The Medrash says, it actually brings it on the pasuk, because it tells us that at the same time when Nebuchadnezzar was conquering Eretz Yisrael and taking Yechoniah into Golus, is the same time when Daryavish, who eventually overthrew his empire, was born. So the fact that Nebuchadnezzar had such chutzpah to enter the Beis Hamikdash and to take over over there, so therefore, because of that, his nemesis, Daryavish, who eventually took over his kingship and overthrew it, was born on the same day. Anyway, so that was the end of Belshazzar. So now, a few years later, Achashverosh says to himself, Omar, he thinks to himself, Ihu Monavita. You know what? He counted, and obviously he made a mistake, and he paid for it with his life and with his kingdom. I'm going to count it differently. I'm not going to make a mistake. Because he realizes Achashverosh is smart. He realizes Miksiv Malchus Babel, the Yumiya never said anything about 70 years since the kingship of Babel. It says when the years are filled up for Babel. That doesn't mean when Babel first became a world empire, as Belshazzar thought. It means Mila Babel, the Golus Babel, means the first time that Babel took Jews into Golus. Shehu Yehoyachin, meaning Golus Yechonia. So therefore he realized, so now when it comes the third year of his kingship, then he realizes the 70 years are up. The Gemara asks, Soif, well, let's calculate then. After all, Tambit Siran, how much are we missing from the 70 years? Tamni. Obviously, when Belshazzar made his party, we're still 8 years short. Because again, Nebuchadnezzar conquered Yechoniah and took him into captivity in Babel in the 8th year of his kingship. So if Belshazzar was counting from the beginning of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, and he should have counted from 8 years later, means we're short 8 years. So how do we figure out those 8 years? So we have to add in another 8. So we have one more of Belshazzar because he made the party in his third year. Or different gersa, 2 years of Daryavish and 3 of Kodesh. Rashi points out, we don't actually have psukim that say in so many words that Daryavish ruled for 2 years and Kodesh for 3, but the Gemara had the Kabbalah, that's how it is. So you have 2 different gersos, whether the Gemara is breaking it down and mentioning the specific number, 2 years for Daryavish and 3 for Kodesh, or whether it actually is just generalizing and saying 5 years for them altogether. So we have so far 6, one left to Belshazzar and 5 between Daryavish and Kodesh. But Tautigidei, then you have 2 years of Achashverosh's own kingship. Hashivin, there's your 70. Kivin de Chazu de Malu Shivin v'la Ifruk, now that he saw 70 years have passed, according to his Cheshbin, and they haven't been redeemed yet, Omar, so he thinks to himself, again, Midoloi Ifruk, Hashta Vade, Tuloi Miparki, since they haven't been redeemed yet, surely now they're not going to be redeemed. So he also took out the Kalim of the Beis Mikdash, the Ishtamish Bahoin, and he used them by his party. So that's what we mean. In other words, that's what Rav, the point Rav is making, is that what it means, Kesheva Samalach Achashverosh, and then it says Vishnas Shalosh Lamochai, means until the third year of his kingship, he wasn't secure on his throne because he thought the 70 years have yet to finish up. And as soon as the 70 years are over, Hashem is going to take the Jewish people out of Golos, and my kingship is going to become a nothing. So therefore, he waited until the third year, and only then is he secure, and only then does he feel safe to take out the Kalim of the Bismanish. This time, also Sutton Verikid Benehim, the Sutton came and danced between them. In other words, the Sutton brought about, the trouble came about between Achashverosh and Vashti. Baharagas Vashti, and the result is Vashti was killed. Now, why wasn't Achashverosh himself killed the same way as Belshazzar was? So Ben Yehoyada says a reason is because to a certain extent there's a certain limud schos on Achashverosh. After all, he's only following in the footsteps of Belshazzar. So in a way, it's not so bad. On the other hand, the fact that, and so he says, actually, so what do we have? So that's true. That was later. But anyway, Ben Yehoyada makes the point. Vashti, as we learned before, was a daughter of Belshazzar. She's the last of that royal line. We learned before, Ba'avad Misham Melech Vesarim, that the last kingship of Bavel, was left over from Bavel, was Vashti. So when she got killed, then that also gets back at Belshazzar, and it also, of course, gets back at Achashverosh, because after all, it's his wife, Ishta Kegufa, and all that. There are other Mephoshim who make a different point. After all, eventually, Achashverosh is going to have, with Esther, he's going to have Daryavish, the second Daryavish, who's going to give permission to rebuild the Bais Mikdash. So therefore, Hashem didn't want to kill Achashverosh at that point, because then Daryavish will never be born. So therefore, Hashem left him alive, but he caused Vashti to get killed. So the Gemara asks for Shapir Choshev. So what was the problem? It was a valid calculation. The answer is Ir Nami Mitata. The answer is Achashverosh was also making a mistake. Instead of counting from the first Golos, he should have counted from the second Golos, which was 11 years later. So the Gemara asks, so if you say, Kama Betsirin Chad Surei, okay, well then we're missing 11 years. Ihu Kama Molach Arbesar, how long did Achashverosh rule? 14 years. And Rashi explains, we know that because Haman made his girdle, and you have most of the events of the Megillah, that from Perek Gimel through Perek Ches of the Megillah takes place in Achashverosh's 12th year. The next year, you have Perek Tes, or Shnei Masa Chodesh or Chodesh Adar. That's already Achashverosh's 13th year. And then you have the events when they wiped out their enemies and hanged the 10 sons of Haman and so on and so forth. And then you have that Esther and Mordechai wrote Igeres HaPurim Azos HaSheinis the following year. That brings us to the 14th year. And that's it. That's as long as Achashverosh ruled. By the way, now that doesn't mean, how do we know? He still could have lived, ruled 15 or 16 or whatever years. Many times Chazal use a rule called Loi bar kostim, kostim listim el lefarish. If the Torah is going to give us numbers, it's not coming in order to hide things, but in order to tell us facts. In other words, given that the highest number year that we find for Achashverosh is 14, if he ruled longer than that, then the Psukim should give us some kind of hint of it. Because they don't, then we can assume the 14th year was in fact his last year. So therefore, say he ruled for 14 years. Now, we said he made the party in his third year. If you're telling me we're missing 11 years, over our base of delay, so then the Bais HaMikdash should have been built in his 14th year. And yet, why does the Pasuk say, they die in after the Kusim and all had gotten involved and forced the work on the Bais HaMikdash to stop? Talus Avidas Beis HaKadosh Yerushalayim. The work on the house of Hashem in Yerushalayim was stopped. Vahavas Batla, and it remained Batla, Ad Shnas Tautin Lamalchus Daryavish Melech Paras, until the second year of Daryavish. So why? Where do those extra 2 years come in from? If Achashverosh made his party in his third year, and that was 70 years since Golos Yechonia, then 11 years later should be 70 years since the Korban, and yet we're saying 70 years since the Korban is only 2 years later. The answer is Amar Rav Shonim Mekutoris Hayu. The answer is the Havel. The answer is some of the years that we're talking about were not complete years. Meaning, again, when we said before that Daryavish ruled for 2 years, it was actually only 1 year and a little bit. And the same way with Kodesh. So when Achashverosh calculated and made his party, then he was counting in terms of Shonim Mekutoris. He's calculating in terms of Daryavish having been a full 2 years and Kodesh being a full 3 years. But now we're saying it wasn't so. So therefore, you have two years missing over there. And the same way earlier, you also have various parts of years missing earlier. And therefore, the entire 70 years since the Korban, actually it comes out to the second year of the second Daryavish. This is what we have on the papers over here. See, Belshazzar thought that 70 years have passed since the beginning of the empire. But actually, as the Gemara is going to say now, only 69 years have passed since he conquered Eretz Yisrael. Now, the next one was, we said Ahasuerus figured that 70 years have passed since Yechoniah's Golus, but he didn't, because he's counting as if they were all full years, but he doesn't realize that there are fractional years involved over here, but that's fine. That wasn't his mistake, but the mistake was that he didn't realize that you have to count since the Churban, which gives us, besides that you have to fill in all the fractions, you also need another 11 years, and that brings us to the second year of Dariush. And the Gemara says, Tani Namihochi. In fact, we learn like that in a Braisa. Oid Shona Acheres Yesh L'Bavel. As a matter of fact, when Belshazzar made his party, there was still another year left of that was supposed to be for Bavel. Daryavish came and completed it. Meaning, in other words, when Belshazzar made his party, it also wasn't full 70 years since the Nebuchadnezzar had become king. First of all, it's only 69 years since he had conquered Eretz Yisrael. But second of all, even in terms of the years of the kings themselves, again, you have Nebuchadnezzar and Evel Merodach is not full 45 and full 23 years, but rather 44 and a fraction and 23 and a fraction. So really, there was still a year left to go. Had Belshazzar not made his party at that point, he would have gotten that 70th year because he messed up and made the party and was chutzpahdik towards Hashem. Therefore, Hashem took that 1 year that should have been left of the empire of Bavel and took it away from him. And Belshazzar was killed and Dariush filled out that 70th year. So that's how it all works out. We'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. We'll continue next time, Be'ez Hashem, and we'll discuss more details about this chronology of that time. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGo'olach of Zayin Adar Aleph. And by the way, of Zayin Adar Aleph, we should all be giving a certain thought to it, remembering that it's now 32 years. But
I heard today from my brother Nati Sol, but the Rav and Nati Sol said that the Alter Rebbe said that Chavzayin Adar, the day that they had to do healing, and nobody knew that down the road.
Okay, so the Rebbe once said at Echidus that before the Gola Amitis Vashlema, you're going to have again the same test that Eliyahu Anovi did by Harakam on Mosat and Poskim on Shtei Asifim, and you have to have the test between Hashem and Lahavdil Baal, and in the end, the fire didn't come down by them, and it came down by Eliyahu, and everybody yelled out Hashem, who are the king. So now, the Rebbe said, when it comes time to the Gola, the same story is going to happen again, with the key difference, the fire is going to come down on the side of the Nevi'ah Baal. The ones who are claiming that Eliyahu is the one who's destroying the Jewish people. It's not going to come down on the side of Kedusha. That's going to be the ultimate test for the Jewish people. Still, we're not going to get confused and we're not going to chas v'shalom follow the Baal. We're still going to proclaim with complete emunah, Hashem hu ha'elikim, Hashem hu ha'elikim, and that's the climactic test that's going to happen, that I've said before Mashiach comes. Continuing on halachos of Shabbos, so we started talking about picking out oichol and psoilos and whatever. So even, for example, peeling onions or garlic or things like that and setting them aside is a problem of boder. And the Alter Rebbe adds also, for the same reason, you shouldn't be eating walnuts and other things like that on Shabbos unless you shelled them on Erev Shabbos. So when it comes to onions or whatever, you can only peel the ones that you're going to need to eat right away. As far as the outer layer that you have on a bulb of garlic, which surrounds all the cloves, some say that that's a different problem of farik, that's a tolda of the malacha of dosh, and some say you shouldn't take that off on Shabbos at all. Okay.